election, that she was not being unfair or undemocratic, or worse still, racist. But she had read Colorblind, a seminal leaflet from the Rainbow Coalition. She had scored well on the self-test. Racist in ways that were so deeply ingrained and socially determining that they escaped her attention. But no, no, she wasn't crazy. Any random extract highlighted the problem. 13. Mrs. Janet Trott wishes to propose a second climbing frame be built in the playground to accommodate the large number of children who enjoy the present climbing frame, but unfortunately have made it a safety risk through dangerous overcrowding. Mrs. Trott's husband, the architect, Hanover Trott, is willing to design and oversee the building of such a frame at no cost to the school. 13.1. Chairwoman can see no objection. Moves to put the proposition to a vote. 13.2. Mr. Iqbal wishes to know why the Western education system privileges activity of the body over activity of the mind and soul. 13.3. The chairwoman wonders if this is quite relevant. 13.4. Mr. Iqbal demands the vote be delayed until he can present a paper detailing the main arguments and emphasizes that his sons, Majid and Millat, get all the exercise they need via headstands that strengthen the muscles and send blood to stimulate the somatosensory cortex in the brain. 13.5. Mrs. Wolf asks whether Mr. Iqbal expects her Susan to undertake compulsory headstands. 13.6. Mr. Iqbal infers that, considering Susan's academic performance and weight problems, a headstand regime might be desirable. Yes, Mr. Iqbal. Samad forcefully removed Alsana's fingers from the clamp grip they had assumed on his lapel, stood up quite unnecessarily, and sorted through a number of papers he had on a clipboard, removing the one he wanted and holding it out before him. Yes, yes, I have a motion. I have a motion. The subtlest manifestation of a groan went round the group of governors, followed by a short period of shifting, scratching, leg crossing, bag rifling, and the repositioning of coats on chairs.
Another one, Mr. Iqbal?
Oh yes, Mrs. Miniver.
Only you've tabled 12 motions already this evening. I think possibly somebody else...
Oh, it is much too important to be delayed, Mrs. Miniver. Now, if I can just...
Ms. Miniver.
Pardon me?
It's just... It's Ms. Miniver. All evening you've been... And it's... Actually, it's not Mrs. It's Ms. Ms.
Samad looked quizzically at Katie Miniver, then at his papers, as if to find the answer there, then at the beleaguered chairwoman again. I'm sorry, you are not married?
Divorced, actually. Yes, divorced. I'm keeping the name.
I see. You have my condolences, Miss Miniver. Now, the matter I...
I'm sorry, said Katie, pulling her fingers through her intractable hair. It's not Miss either. I'm sorry. I have been married, you see. So...
Ellen Corcoran and Janine Lanzarano, two friends from the Women's Action Group, gave Katie a supportive smile. Ellen shook her head to indicate that Katie mustn't cry, because you're doing well, really well. Janine mouthed, "Go on," and gave her a furtive thumbs up.
I really wouldn't feel comfort. I just feel marital status shouldn't be an issue. It's not that I want to embarrass you, Mr. Iqbal. I just would feel more... If you... It's... Ms.
Ms?
Ms.
And this is some kind of linguistic conflation between the words Mrs. and Miss? Asked Samad, genuinely curious and oblivious to the nether wobblings of Katie Miniver's bottom lip. Something to describe the woman who has either lost her husband or has no prospect of finding another. Alsana groaned and put her head in her hands. Samad looked at his clipboard, underlined something in pen three times, and turned to the parent governors once more. The harvest festival! Shifting, scratching, leg crossing, coat repositioning.
Yes, Mr. Iqbal, said Katie Miniver. What about the harvest festival?
That is precisely what I want to know. What is all this about the harvest festival? What is it? Why is it? And why must my children celebrate it? The headmistress, Mrs. Owens, a genteel woman with a soft face, half hidden behind a fiercely cut blonde bob, motioned to Katie Miniver that she would handle this.
Mr. Iqbal, we have been through the matter of religious festivals quite thoroughly in the Autumn Review. As I'm sure you are aware, the school already recognizes a great variety of religious and secular events. Amongst them, Christmas, Ramadan, Chinese New Year, Diwali, Yom Kippur, Hanukkah, the birthday of Haile Selassie, and the death of Martin Luther King. The Harvest Festival is part of the school's ongoing commitment to religious diversity, Mr. Iqbal.
I see. And are there many pagans, Mrs. Owens, at Manor School?
Pagan? I'm afraid I don't understand.
It is very simple. The Christian calendar has 37 religious events. 37! The Muslim calendar has 9. Only 9. And they are squeezed out by this incredible rash of Christian festivals. Now, my motion is simple. If we removed all the pagan festivals from the Christian calendar, there would be an average of... Samad paused to look at his clipboard. Of 20 days freed up, in which the children could celebrate Layalat ul-Qadr in December, Eid ul-Fitr in January, and Eid ul-Adha in April, for example. And the first festival that must go, in my opinion, is this harvest festival business.
I'm afraid, said Mrs. Owens, doing her pleasant but firm smile and playing her punchline to the crowd. Removing Christian festivals from the face of the earth is a little beyond my jurisdiction. Otherwise, I would remove Christmas Eve and save myself a lot of work in stocking stuffing.
Samad ignored the general giggle this prompted and pressed on. But this is my whole point. This harvest festival is not a Christian festival. Where in the Bible does it say, "For thou must steal foodstuffs from thy parents' cupboards and bring them into school assembly, and thou shalt force thy mother to bake a loaf of bread in the shape of a fish"? These are pagan ideals. Tell me, where does it say, "Thou shalt take a box of frozen fish fingers to an aged crone who lives in Wembley"?
Mrs. Owens frowned, unaccustomed to sarcasm unless it was of the teacher variety, that is, "Do we live in a barn? And I suppose you treat your own house like that." Surely, Mr. Iqbal, it is precisely the charity aspect of the harvest festival that makes it worth retaining. Taking food to the elderly seems to me a laudable idea, whether it has scriptural support or not.
Certainly, nothing in the Bible suggests we should sit down to a turkey meal on Christmas Day, but few people would condemn it on those grounds. To be honest, Mr. Iqbal, we like to think of these things as more about community than religion as such.
A man's God is his community, said Samad, raising his voice.
Yes. Well, shall we vote on the motion?
Mrs. Owens looked nervously around the room for hands.
Will anyone second it?
Samad pressed Alsana's hand. She kicked him in the ankle. He stamped on her toe. She pinched his flank. He bent her little finger, and she grudgingly raised her right arm while deftly elbowing him in the crotch with her left.
Thank you, Mrs. Iqbal, said Mrs. Owens,
as Janice and Ellen looked over to her with the piteous, saddened smiles they reserved for subjugated Muslim women.
All those in favor of the motion to remove the harvest festival from the school calendar,
on the grounds of its pagan roots.
On the grounds of certain pagan connotations? Raise your hands. Mrs. Owen scanned the room. One hand, that of the pretty red-headed music teacher, Poppy Burt Jones, shot up, sending her many bracelets jangling down her wrist. Then the Chalfans, Marcus and Joyce, an aging hippie couple, both dressed in pseudo-Indian garb, raised their hands defiantly. Then Samad looked pointedly at Clara and Archie, sitting sheepishly on the other side of the hall, and two more hands slowly moved above the crowd. All those against? The remaining 36 hands lifted into the air. Motion not passed.
I am certain the Solar Covenant of Manor School Witches and Goblins will be delighted with that decision, said Samad, retaking his seat.
After the meeting, as Samad emerged from the toilets, having relieved himself with some difficulty in a miniature urinal, the pretty red-headed music teacher, Poppy Burt Jones, accosted him in the corridor.
Mr. Iqbal?
Hmm?
She extended a long, pale, lightly freckled arm.
Poppy Burt Jones, I take Majid and Millat for orchestra and singing.
Samad replaced the dead right hand she meant to shake with his working left.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's not painful. It just does not work.
Oh, good. I mean, I'm glad there's no, you know, pain.
She was what you would call effortlessly pretty. About 28, maybe 32 at most. Slim, but not at all hard-bodied, and with a curved ribcage like a child. Long, flat breasts that lifted at their tips. An open-neck white shirt, some well-worn Levi's and grey trainers. A lot of dark red hair swished up in a sloppy ponytail. Wispy bits falling at the neck. Freckled. A very pleasant, slightly goofy smile, which she was showing Samad right now.
Was there something you wanted to discuss about the twins? A problem?
Oh, no. Well, you know, they're fine. Majid has a little difficulty, but with his good marks, I'm sure playing the recorder isn't high on his list. And Millat has a real flair for the sax. No, I just wanted to say that I thought you made a good point, you know, she said, chucking her thumb over her shoulder in the direction of the hall. In the meeting, the Harvest Festival always seemed so ridiculous to me. I mean, if you want to help old people, you know, well, vote for a different government. Don't send them cans of Heinz spaghetti.
She smiled at him again and tucked a piece of hair behind her ear.
It is a great shame more people do not agree, said Samad,
flattered somehow by the second smile and sucking in his well-toned 57-year-old stomach.
We seemed very much in the minority this evening.
Well, the Chalfans were behind you. They're such nice people. Intellectuals, she whispered, as if it were some exotic disease of the tropics. He's a scientist, and she's something in gardening, but both very down to earth with it. I talked to them, and they thought you should pursue it. You know, actually, I was thinking that maybe we could get together at some point in the next few months and work on a second motion for the September meeting, you know, nearer the actual time. Make it a little more coherent, maybe print out leaflets, that sort of thing. Because, you know, I'm really interested in Indian culture. I just think those festivals you mentioned would be so much more colorful. And we could tie it in with artwork, music. It could be really exciting, said Poppy Burt Jones, getting really excited. And I think it would be really good, you know, for the kids. It was not possible, Samad knew, for this woman to have any erotic interest in him whatsoever.
But still he glanced around for Ulsanna. Still he jangled his car keys nervously in his pockets. Still he felt a cold thing land on his heart, and knew it was fear of his God.
"I'm not actually from India, you know," said Samad,
with infinitely more patience than he had ever previously employed the many times he had been required to repeat this sentence since moving to England. Poppy Burt Jones looked surprised and disappointed.
"You're not?"
"No, I'm from Bangladesh."
"Bangladesh?"
"Previously Pakistan. Previous to that, Bengal."
"Oh, right. Same sort of ballpark, then?"
"Just about the same stadium, yes."
There was a bit of a difficult pause, in which Samad saw clearly that he wanted her more than any woman he had met in the past 10 years. Just like that. Desire didn't even bother casing the joint, checking whether the neighbors were in. Desire just kicked down the door and made himself at home. He felt queasy. Then he became aware that his face was moving from arousal to horror in a grotesque parody of the movements of his mind as he weighed up Poppy Burt Jones and all the physical and metaphysical consequences she suggested. He must speak before it got any worse.
"Well, it is a good idea, retabling the motion,"
he said against his will. For something more bestial than his will was now doing the talking.
"If you could spare the time."
"Well, we can talk about it. I'll give you a call about it in a few weeks. We could meet after orchestra, maybe."
"That would be fine."
"Great. That's agreed, then. You know, your boys are really adorable. They're very unusual. I was saying it to the Chalfans, and Marcus put his finger on it. He said that Indian children, if you don't mind me saying, are usually a lot more..."
"More?"
"Quiet. Beautifully behaved, but very, I don't know, subdued."
Samad winced inside, imagining Ulsanna listening to this.
"And Majid and Milat are just so loud."
Samad tried to smile.
"Majid is so impressive intellectually for a 9-year-old. Everybody says so. I mean, he's really remarkable. You must be so proud. He's like a little adult. Even his clothes. I don't think I've ever known a 9-year-old to dress so severely."
Both twins had always been determined to choose their own clothes. But where Millat had bullied Ulsanna into purchases of red stripe Nike, Oshkosh Bigosh, and strange jumpers that had patterns on the inside and the out, Majid could be found, whatever the weather, in grey pullover, grey shirt and black tie, with his shiny black shoes and NHS specs perched upon his nose, like some dwarf librarian. Ulsanna would say, "Little man, how about the blue one for Amma, pushing him into the primary colour section of Mothercare. "Just one blue one. Go so nice with your eyes. For Amma, Majid. How can you not care for blue? It's the colour of the sky." "No, Amma. The sky isn't blue. There's just white light. White light has all the colours of the rainbow in it. And when it is scattered through the squillions of molecules in the sky, the shortwave colours, blue, violet, they're the ones you see. The sky isn't really blue. It just looks that way. It's called Rayleigh scattering." A strange child with a cold intellect.
"You must be so proud,"
Poppy repeated with a huge smile.
"I would be."
"Sadly,"
said Samad, sighing, distracted from his erection by the dismal thought of his second son by 2 minutes.
"Millat is a good for nothing."
Poppy looked mortified at this.
"Oh, no. No, I didn't mean that at all. I mean, I think he's probably a little intimidated by Majid in that way, but he's such a personality. He's just not so academic, but everybody just loves him. Such a beautiful boy as well, of course, she said, giving him a wink and a knock on the shoulder. Good genes.
Good genes? What did she mean, good genes?
Hello, said Archie, who had walked up behind them, giving Samad a strong thud on the back. Hello, he said again, shaking Poppy's hand, with the almost mock aristocratic manner he used when confronted with educated people. Archie Jones, father of Erie, for my sins.
Poppy Bird Jones, I take Erie for...
Music, yes, I know. Talks about you constantly. Bit disappointed you passed her over for first violin, though. Maybe next year, eh?
So,
said Archie, looking from Poppy to Samad, who was standing slightly apart from the other two and had a queer look, Archie thought, a bloody queer look on his face. You've met the notorious Iqbal. You were a bit much in that meeting, Samad, eh? Wasn't he, eh?
Oh, I don't know, said Poppy sweetly. I thought Mr. Iqbal made some good points, actually. I was really impressed by a lot of what he said. I'd like to be that knowledgeable on so many subjects. Sadly, I'm a bit of a one-trick pony. Are you, I don't know, a professor of some kind, Mr. Iqbal?
No, no, said Samad, furious that he was unable to lie because of Archie, and finding the word waiter stopping in his throat. No, the fact is I work in a restaurant. I did some study in younger days, but the war came and... Samad shrugged as an end to the sentence and watched with sinking heart as Poppy Bird Jones's freckled face contorted into one large, red, perplexed question mark.
War,
she said, as if he had said wireless or pianola or water closet.
The Falklands?
No, said Samad flatly. The Second World.
Oh, Mr. Iqbal, you'd never guess. You must have been ever so young.
There were tanks there older than us, love, said Archie with a grin.
Well, Mr. Iqbal, that is a surprise. But they say dark skin wrinkles less, don't they?
Do they? Said Samad, forcing himself to imagine her taut, pink skin, folded over in layer after layer of dead epidermis. I thought it was children that kept a man young. Poppy laughed.
That too, I'd imagine. Well,
she said, looking flushed, coy and sure of herself, all at the same time.
You look very good on it. I'm sure the Omar Sharif comparison's been made before, Mr. Iqbal?
No, 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 said Samad, glowing with pleasure. The only comparison lies in our mutual love of bridge. No, no, no. And it's Samad, he added. Call me Samad, please. You'll have to call him Samad some other time, miss, said Archie, who always persisted in calling teachers miss, because we've got to go. Wives waiting in the driveway. Dinner, apparently.
Well, it was nice talking to you, said Poppy, reaching for the wrong hand again and blushing as he met her with the left.
Yes. Goodbye.
Come on,
said Archie, fielding Samad out of the door and down the sloping driveway to the front gates.
Dear God, fit as a butcher's dog, that one. Whee-you! Nice, very nice. Dear me, you were trying it on.
And what were you on about? Mutual love of bridge? I've known you decades, and I've never seen you play bridge. Five-card poker's more your game.
Shut up, Archibald.
No, no. Fair dues. You did very well.
It's not like you, though, Samad, having found God and all that.
not like you to be distracted by the attractions of the flesh." Samad shook Archie's hand from where it was resting on his shoulder.
"Why are you so irredeemably vulgar?"
"I wasn't the one..." But Samad wasn't listening. He was already reciting in his head, repeating two English phrases that he tried hard to believe in. Words he had learnt these past 10 years in England, words he hoped could protect him from the abominable heat in his trousers. "To the pure, all things are pure. To the pure, all things are pure. To the pure, all things are pure." Can't say fairer than that. Can't say fairer than that. Can't say fairer than that. But let's rewind a little. 1. To the pure, all things are pure. Sex, at least the temptation of sex, had long been a problem. When the fear of God first began to creep into Samad's bones, circa 1976, just after his marriage to the small-palmed, weak-wristed and disinterested Alsana, he had inquired of an elderly alim in the mosque in Croydon whether it was permitted that a man might, with his hand on his, Before he had got halfway through his tentative mime, the old scholar had silently passed him a leaflet from a pile on a table and drawn his wrinkled digit firmly underneath point number 3. "There are 9 acts which invalidate fast. 1. Eating and drinking. 2. Sexual intercourse. 3. Masturbation, istimna, which means self-abuse, resulting in ejaculation. 4. Ascribing false things to Almighty Allah, or His Prophet, or to the successors of the Holy Prophet. 5. Swallowing thick dust. 6. Immersing one's complete head in water. 7. Remaining in janabat or haid or nifas till the adhan for fajr prayers. 8. Enema with liquids. 9. Vomiting."
"And what, alim?" Samad had inquired, dismayed. "If he is not fasting?"
The old scholar looked grave.
"Ibn Umar was asked about it, and is reported to have answered, 'It is nothing except the rubbing of the male member until its water comes out. It is only a nerve that one needs.'"
Samad had taken heart at this, but the alim continued, "However, he answered in another report, 'It has been forbidden that one should have intercourse with oneself.'"
"But which is the correct belief? Is it halal or haram?"
"There are some who say,"
Samad had begun sheepishly,
"'To the pure, all things are pure. If one is truthful and firm in oneself, it can harm nobody else, nor offend—'
But the alim laughed at this.
"'And we know who they are. Allah, have pity on the Anglicans. Samad, when the male organ of a man stands erect, 2/3 of his intellect go away,'" said the alim, shaking his head, "'and 1/3 of his religion. There is an hadith of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. It is as follows: O Allah, I seek refuge in you from the evil of my hearing, of my sight, of my tongue, of my heart, and of my private parts. But surely, surely if the man himself is pure, then show me the pure man, Samad. Show me the pure act. Oh, Samad Mia, my advice to you is stay away from your right hand. Of course, Samad, being Samad, had employed the best of his Western pragmatism, gone home, and vigorously tackled the job with his functional left hand, repeating, to the pure, all things are pure. To the pure, all things are pure. Until orgasm finally arrived, sticky, sad, depressing. And that ritual continued for some 5 years, in the little bedroom at the top of the house where he slept alone, so as not to wake Alsana, after crawling back from the restaurant at 3 in the morning, each and every morning. Secretly, silently. For he was, believe it or not, tortured by it. By this furtive yanking and squeezing and spilling, by the fear that he was not pure, that his acts were not pure, that he would never be pure. And always his God seemed to be sending him small signs, small warnings, small curses, a urethra infection, 1976, castration dream, 1978, dirty, encrusted sheet, discovered but misunderstood, by Alsana's great-aunt, 1979. Until 1980 brought crisis point, and Samad heard Allah roaring in his ear like the waves in a conch shell, and it seemed time to make a deal. 2. Can't say fairer than that. The deal was this. On 1st January 1980, like a New Year dieter who gives up cheese on the condition that they can have chocolate, Samad gave up masturbation so that he might drink. It was a deal, a business proposition, that he had made with God. Samad being the party of the first part, God being the sleeping partner. And since that day, Samad had enjoyed relative spiritual peace and many a frothy Guinness with Archibald Jones. He had even developed the habit of taking his last gulp, looking up at the sky like a Christian, thinking, I'm basically a good man. I don't slap the salami. Give me a break. I have the odd drink. Can't say fairer than that. But of course, he was in the wrong religion for compromises, deals, pacts, weaknesses, and can't say fairer than that. He was supporting the wrong team if it was empathy and concessions he wanted, if he wanted liberal exegesis, if he wanted to be given a break. His God was not like that charming white-bearded bungler of the Anglican, Methodist, or Catholic churches. His God was not in the business of giving people breaks. The moment Samad set eyes on the pretty red-haired music teacher Poppy Burt Jones that July of 1984, he knew finally the truth of this. He knew his God was having his revenge. He knew the game was up. He saw that the contract had been broken, and the sanity clause did not, after all, exist. That temptation had been deliberately and maliciously thrown in his path. In short, all deals were off. Masturbation recommenced in earnest. Those 2 months, between seeing the pretty red-haired music teacher once and seeing her again, were the longest, stickiest, smelliest, guiltiest 56 days of Samad's life. Wherever he was, whatever he was doing, he found himself suddenly accosted by some kind of synesthetic fixation with the woman. Hearing the color of her hair in the mosque, smelling the touch of her hand on the tube, tasting her smile while innocently walking the streets on his way to work. And this in turn led to a knowledge of every public convenience in London,
led to the kind of masturbation that even a 15-year-old boy living in the Shetlands might find excessive. His only comfort was that he, like Roosevelt, had made a new deal. He was going to beat, but he wasn't going to eat. He meant somehow to purge himself of the sights and smells of Poppy Burt Jones, of the sin of Istimna, and, though it wasn't fasting season, and these were the longest days of the year, still no substance passed Samad's lips between sunrise and sunset, not even, thanks to the little china spittoon, his own saliva. And because there was no food going in the one end, what came out of the other end was so thin and so negligible, so meager and translucent, that Samad could almost convince himself that the sin was lessened. That one wonderful day, he would be able to massage One-Eyed Jack as vigorously as he liked, and nothing would come out but air. But despite the intensity of the hunger, spiritual, physical, sexual, Samad still did his 12 hours daily in the restaurant. Frankly, he found the restaurant about the only place he could bear to be. He couldn't bear to see his family. He couldn't bear to go to O'Connell's. He couldn't bear to give Archie the satisfaction of seeing him in such a state. By mid-August, he had upped his working hours to 14 a day. Something in the ritual of it, picking up his basket of pink swan-shaped napkins and following the trail of Shiva's plastic carnations, correcting the order of a knife or fork, polishing a glass, removing the smear of a finger from the china plates, soothed him. No matter how bad a Muslim he might be, no one could say Samad wasn't a consummate waiter. He had taken one tedious skill and honed it to perfection. Here at least he could show others the right path. How to disguise a stale onion bhaji. How to make fewer prawns look like more. How to explain to an Australian that he doesn't want the amount of chili he thinks he wants. Outside the doors of the palace, he was a masturbator, a bad husband, an indifferent father, with all the morals of an Anglican. But inside here, within these four green and yellow paisley walls, he was a one-handed genius.
Shiva, flower missing, here!
It was 2 weeks into Samad's new deal, and an average Friday afternoon at the palace setting up.
You've missed this vase, Shiva!
Shiva wandered over to examine the empty, pencil-thin aquamarine vase on table 19.
And there is some lime pickle afloat in the mango chutney in the sauce carousel on table 15?
Really? Said Shiva dryly. Poor Shiva. Nearly 30 now. Not so pretty. Still here. It had never happened for him. Whatever he thought was going to happen for him. He did leave the restaurant, Samad remembered vaguely, for a short time in 1979, to start up a security firm. But nobody wanted to hire packy bouncers. And he had come back. A little less aggressive, a little more despairing, like a broken horse.
Yes, Shiva, really and truly.
And that's what's driving you crazy, is it?
I wouldn't go as far as to say crazy, no. It is troubling me.
Because something, interrupted Shiva, has got right up your arse recently. We've all noticed it.
We?
Us. The boys. Yesterday, it was a grain of salt in a napkin. The day before, Gandhi wasn't hung straight on the wall. The past week, you've been acting like Führerji, said Shiva, nodding in Ardashir's direction. Like a crazy man. You don't smile. You don't eat. You're constantly on everybody's case. And when the head waiter's not all there, it puts everybody off. Like a football captain.
I am certain I do not know to what you are referring, said Samad,
tight-lipped, passing him the vase. And I'm certain you do, said Shiva provocatively, placing the empty vase back on the table.
If I'm concerned about something, there is no reason why it should disrupt my work here, said Samad, becoming panicked, passing him back the vase. I do not wish to inconvenience others.
Shiva returned the vase to the table once more. So there is something. Come on, man. I know we haven't always seen eye to eye, but we've got to stick together in this place. How long have we worked together? Samad Mia. Samad looked up suddenly at Shiva, and Shiva saw he was sweating, that he seemed almost dazed.
Yes. Yes. There is something.
Shiva put his hand on Samad's shoulder. So why don't we sod the fucking carnation and go and cook you a curry? Sun'll be down in 20 minutes. Come on, you can tell Shiva all about it. Not because I give a fuck, you understand? But I have to work here too, and you're driving me mad, mate. Samad, oddly touched by this inelegant offer of a listening ear, laid down his pink swans and followed Shiva into the kitchens. Animal, vegetable, mineral. Shiva stood at a work surface and began chopping a breast of chicken into perfect cubes and dousing them in corn flour.
Pardon me?
Is it animal, vegetable, or mineral? Repeated Shiva impatiently. The thing that's bothering you.
Animal, mainly.
Female? Samad dropped onto a nearby stool and hung his head. Female, Shiva concluded. Wife?
The shame of it, the pain of it, will come to my wife. But no, she is not the cause.
Another bird, my specialist subject. Shiva performed the action of rolling a camera, sang the theme to Mastermind, and jumped into shot. Shiva Bhagwati, you have 30 seconds on shagging women other than your wife. First question, is it right? Answer, depends. Second question, shall I go to hell? Samad cut in, disgusted.
I am not making love to her.
I started, so I'll finish. Shall I go to hell? Answer,
enough. Forget it. Please forget that I mentioned anything of this.
Do you want aubergine in this?
No, green peppers are sufficient.
All righty, said Shiva, throwing a green pepper up in the air and catching it on the tip of his knife. One chicken boona coming up. How long's it been going on then?
Nothing is going on. I met her only once. I barely know her.
So, what's the damage? A grope? A snog?
A handshake only. She is my son's teacher.
Shiva tossed the onions and peppers into hot oil. You've had the odd stray thought. So what?
Samad stood up. It is more than stray thoughts, Shiva. My whole body is mutinous. Nothing will do what I tell it. Never before have I been subjected to such physical indignities. For example, I am constantly...
Yeah, said Shiva, indicating Samad's crotch. We notice that too. Why don't you do the five-knuckle shuffle before you get to work?
I do. I am. But it makes no difference. Besides, Allah forbids it.
Ah, you should never have got religious, Samad. It don't suit you. Shiva wiped an onion tear away. All that guilt's not healthy.
It is not guilt. It is fear. I am 57, Shiva. When you get to my age, you become concerned about your fate. You don't want to leave things too late. I have been corrupted by England. I see that now. My children, my wife, they too have been corrupted. I think maybe I have made the wrong friends. Maybe I have been frivolous.
Maybe I have thought intellect more important than faith. And now it seems this final temptation has been put in front of me. To punish me, you understand? Shiva, you know about women. Help me. How can this feeling be possible? I have known of the woman's existence for no more than a few months. I have spoken to her only once. As you said, you're 57. Midlife crisis.
Midlife? What does this mean?
Snapped Samad irritably.
Damn it, Shiva. I don't plan to live for 114 years.
It's a manner of speaking. You read about it in the magazines these days. It's when a man gets to a certain point in life. He starts feeling he's over the hill. And you're as young as the girl you feel, if you get my meaning.
I am at a moral crossroads in my life, and you are talking nonsense to me.
You've got to learn this stuff, mate,
said Shiva, speaking slowly, patiently. Female organism. G-spot. Testicle cancer. The menstruopause. Midlife crisis is one of them. Information the modern man needs at his fingertips.
But I don't wish for such information, cried Samad,
standing up and pacing the kitchen.
That is precisely the point. I don't wish to be a modern man. I wish to live as I was always meant to. I wish to return to the East.
Ah, well, we all do, don't we?
Murmured Shiva, pushing the peppers and onion around the pan. I left when I was 3. Fuck knows I haven't made anything of this country. But who's got the money for the airfare? And who wants to live in a shack with 14 servants on the payroll? Who knows what Shiva Bhagwati would have turned out like back in Calcutta? Prince or pauper? And who? Said Shiva, some of his old beauty returning to his face. Can pull the West out of him once it's in. Samad continued to pace.
I should never have come here. That's where every problem has come from. Never should have brought my sons here. So far from God. Willesden Green. Calling cards in sweet shop windows. Judy Bloom in the school. Condom on the pavement. Harvest festival. Teacher temptresses.
Roared Samad, picking items at random.
Shiva, I tell you, in confidence. My dearest friend, Archibald Jones, is an unbeliever. Now, what kind of a model am I for my children?
Iqbal, sit down. Be calm. Listen, you just want somebody. People want people. It happens from Delhi to Deptford. And it's not the end of the world.
Of this, I wish I could be certain.
When are you next seeing her?
We are meeting for school-related business. The first Wednesday of September.
I see. Is she Hindu, Muslim? She ain't Sikh, is she?
That is the worst of it, said Samad,
his voice breaking.
English? White? English?
Shiva shook his head.
I've been out with a lot of white birds, Samad. A lot. Sometimes it's worked. Sometimes it ain't. 2 lovely American girls. Fell head over heels for a Parisian stunner. Even spent a year with a Romanian, but never an English girl. Never works. Never.
Why?
Asked Samad, attacking his thumbnail with his teeth and awaiting some fearful answer, some edict from on high.
Why not, Shiva Bhagwati?
Too much history,
was Shiva's enigmatic answer as he dished up the chicken bhuna.
Too much bloody history.
8:30 a.m., the first Wednesday of September, 1984. Samad, lost in thought somewhat, heard the passenger door of his Austin Mini Metro open and close, far away in the real world, and turned to his left to find Millat climbing in next to him, or at least a Millat-shaped thing from the neck down. The head replaced by a Tommytronic, a basic computer game that looked like a large pair of binoculars. Within it, Samad knew from experience, a little red car that represented his son was racing a green car and a yellow car along a three-dimensional road of LEDs. Millat parked his tiny backside on the brown plastic seat.
Ooh, cold seat, frozen bum.
Millat, where are Majid and Airi?
Coming.
Coming with the speed of a train or coming with the speed of a snail?
Squealed Millat in response to a virtual blockade that threatened to send his red car spinning off into oblivion.
Please, Millat, take this off.
Can't. Need one, oh, two, seven, 3 points.
Millat, you need to begin to understand numbers. Repeat. 10,273.
Men blousen, poo bumdred, and weventy wee.
Take it off, Millat.
Can't. I'll die. Do you want me to die, Abba?
Samad wasn't listening. It was imperative that he be at school before 9 if this trip were going to have any purpose whatsoever. By 9 she'd be in class. By 9:02 she'd be opening the register with those long fingers. By 9:03 she'd be tapping her high-mooned nails on a wooden desk somewhere out of sight.
Where are they? Do they want to be late for school?
Uh-huh.
Are they always this late?
Asked Samad, for this was not his regular routine. The school run was usually Alsana's or Clara's assignment. It was for a glimpse of Bert Jones, though their meeting was only 7 hours and 57 minutes away. 7 hours and 56 minutes away. 7 hours, that he had undertaken the most odious parental responsibility in the book. And he'd had a hard time convincing Alsana there was nothing peculiar in this sudden desire to participate fully in the educational transportation of his and Archie's offspring.
But Samad, you don't get in the house till 3 in the morning. Are you going peculiar?
I want to see my boys. I want to see Airi. Every morning they are growing up, I never see it. 2 inches Millat has grown.
But not at 8:30 in the morning. It is very funnily enough that he grows all the time, praise Allah. It must be some kind of a miracle. What is it about, hmm?
She dug her fingernail into the overhang of his belly.
Some hokery-pokery. I can smell it. Like goat's tongue gone off.
Ah, Alsana's culinary nose for guilt, deceit, and fear was without equal in the borough of Brent. And Samad was useless in the face of it.
Did she know? Had she guessed?
These anxieties Samad had slept on all night when he wasn't slapping the salami, and then brought to his car first thing so that he might take them out on his children.
Where in hell's name are they?
Hell's bells.
Millat!
You swore,
said Millat, taking lap 14 and getting a 500 bonus for causing the combustion of yellow car.
You always do. So does Mr. Jones.
Well, we have special swearing licenses.
Headless Millat needed no face to express his outrage.
No such thing as...
Okay, okay, okay,
backpedaled Samad, knowing there is no joy to be had in arguing ontology with a 9-year-old.
I have been caught out. No such thing as a license to swear. Millat, where's your saxophone? You have orchestra today.
In the boot?
Said Millat, his voice at once incredulous and disgusted. A man who didn't know the saxophone went in the boot on Sunday night was some kind of a social retard. Why are you picking us up? Mr. Jones picks us up on Mondays. You don't know anything about picking us up or taking us in.
I'm sure somehow I will muddle through, thank you, Millat. It is hardly rocket science after all. Where are those two?
He shouted, beeping the horn, unhinged by his 9-year-old son's ability to recognize the irregularity in his behavior.
And will you please be taking that damn thing off?
Samad made a grab for the Tommytronic and pulled it down around Millat's neck.
You killed me!
Millat looked back in the Tommytronic, horrified, and just in time to witness his tiny red alter ego swerving into the barriers and disappearing in a catastrophic light show of showering yellow sparks.
You killed me when I was winning!
Samad closed his eyes and forced his eyeballs to roll up as far as possible in his head, in the hope that his brain might impact upon them, a self-blinding if he could achieve it, on a par with that other victim of Western corruption, Oedipus. Think. I want another woman. Think. I've killed my son. I swear. I eat bacon. I regularly slap the salami. I drink Guinness. My best friend is a kafir non-believer. I tell myself if I rub up and down without using hands, it does not count. But oh, it does count. It all counts on the great counting board of he who counts. What will happen, Kamashar? How will I absolve myself when the last judgment comes? Click, slam. Click, slam. One Majid. One Irie. Samad opened his eyes and looked in the rear-view mirror. In the back seat were the two children he had been waiting for, both with their little glasses, Irie with her willful afro. Not a pretty child. She had got her genes mixed up. Archie's nose with Clara's awfully buck teeth. Majid, with his thick black hair slicked into an unappealing middle parting. Majid carrying a recorder, Irie with violin. But beyond these basic details, everything was not as it should be. Unless he was very much mistaken, something was rotten in this mini-metro. Something was afoot. Both children were dressed in black from head to toe. Both wore white armbands on their left arms, upon which were painted crude renditions of baskets of vegetables. Both had pads of writing paper and a pen tied around their necks with string.
Who did this to you?
Silence.
Was it Amma? And Mrs. Jones?
Silence.
Majid, Irie, cat got your tongues.
More silence. Children's silence, so desperately desired by adults, yet eerie when it finally occurs.
Millat, do you know what this is about?
It's boring, whined Millat. They're just being clever, clever, snotty, dumb-bum, Lord Magoo, and Mrs. Ugly Poo.
Samad twisted in his car seat to face the two dissenters.
Am I meant to ask you what this is about?
Majid grasped his pen and, in his neat, clinical hand, printed, "If you want to," then ripped off the piece of paper and handed it to Samad.
A vow of silence. I see. You too, Irie? I would have thought you were too sensible for such nonsense.
Irie scribbled for a moment on her pad and passed the missive forward. We are protesting.
Protesting? What are pros and why are you testing them? Did your mother teach you this word?
Irie looked like she was going to burst with the sheer force of her explanation, but Majid mimed the zipping up of her mouth, snatched back the piece of paper, and crossed out the first S.
Oh, I see. Protesting.
Majid and Irie nodded maniacally.
Well, that is indeed fascinating. And I suppose your mother's engineered this whole scenario?